If you're merely competent, you're vulnerable. If you're merely competent, you're ignorable. And AI's coming for you. Yeah. Now, let's not sugarcoat it. They're putting up these videos on TikTok. It is like an LSD fever dream. Nutter Butter has tripled their sales. The customer is the bot. We're not selling to the end user.
Yeah.
We're selling to the decision maker. The decision maker is the freaking bot.
Yeah.
And so it's a new day. It's a new strategy.
AI has made it faster, cheaper, and easier than ever to create content, which sounds great until you realize when anyone can crank out something decent at the push of a button, everything starts to look the same. And the same is boring. That's what today's guest, Mark Schaefer, is here to unpack. He's one of the world's top marketing strategists, and in his new book, Audacious, he breaks down why some brands are thriving while others are stumbling, and why boldness and humanity are the only real edge in an AI-driven world. You've said marketers cannot sit on the sidelines of AI. They must use it. They must learn the tools. They must embrace it. They must understand it. And human differentiation matters more than ever. So why is that the case?
Well, it starts with boring. And the marketing world in general is very boring. I've got statistics in my book that kind of show that. Now, you got AI piling on, you know, coming into this world. And it's just creating, you know, more boring stuff. So the challenge really is for every marketer is if you're merely competent, you're vulnerable. If you're merely competent, you're ignorable. And AI's coming for you.
Yeah.
You know, let's not sugarcoat it, right? Now, there is a place for us. You know, there's a great story in the book. I got to interview a guy named Michael Kravica. Maybe you've heard of Michael. He is the king of viral video. He has more number one videos on YouTube than any other human being. And he said, you know, Mark, people try to copy me and they never can. And here's why. Because they try to make it, their videos, perfect. He said, when I make a video, we never use AI. We have real human feelings, real human emotions, real human reactions. Sometimes the video is a little off. Sometimes the audio is a little off. Maybe there's a speck on the camera because that's real life. And people can tell this is real. Everybody else edits that. So it's sort of ironic in a way, but the raw, the human, the messy, we're going to crave that. We're going to identify with that. And that's something that is distinctly human. And then I also talk about in the book, sort of a framework of how we disrupt marketing that emphasizes the true human contribution to being outstanding and important.
So let's go deeper there, because I really agree with you. I see the same thing. Like, you have AI everywhere. We're going to crave real human connection. And also, like, let me say there's a different way. There's a lot of places where I think, like, you use ChatGPT, you give it a bunch of data, you have it search the web, you get a great answer really fast. Fantastic. I didn't need a human. I got something faster. That's great. But there are lots of decisions where trust really matters. And that's what I've been thinking about. I was like, what are the decisions where trust matters a lot? So, like, you're making a very big purchase decision, or you're making a decision which is you're going through a door where it's going to be hard to go back through, or you're looking at how to spend your time and you want to be genuinely entertained, or you want there to be real stakes. Like, in all of those cases, having a human involved is going to be really critical. And so that looks like exactly what you're describing, which is like imperfections,
yeah,
live events, raw things yeah, that an AI is not designed, tuned to do, won't do. And it does seem like when you have an abundance of one thing, it makes the scarcity of something else more valuable. And it's odd to say that humans will be scarce, but I think knowledge from knowledge and interactions with humans could become quite scarce. And so that is actually what seems like the interesting piece here.
It'll become a luxury.
Yeah.
But you, so your comment is just so rich. And I want to pull out a couple key ideas because they're so important. I don't want to gloss over it. You know, number one, you talked about trust and the humanity of trust. That really gets back to this idea of personal brand, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the three foundational areas for humanity in this AI world, personal brand, community, and then what I talk about in Audacious is this transcendent content. It's the content that goes above and beyond the bots. You know, and I think you're a great example of this because you've built this community around Wistia. That's human. That's a connection of trust. And where did that trust come from? Really, it started with you, right? People heard about you. They heard about your product. They trusted. They want to know more. They're curious.
Well, they read your books.
Well, hopefully. but they join their community. And I mean, that is the personal brand, distinctly human. AI can't touch it. Community, distinctly human. AI can't touch it. We will thrive in those environments. And then creating this content that is that, you know, it's being the peacock at the penguin party, right? The whole world is a penguin party right now. And you know, to build on that a little bit. So you just got my wheels turning, man. You know, one of the great case studies that I loved in the book, and I got to know these guys a little bit, is Liquid Death. Mm. And the founder of Liquid Death did not create that brand because he was passionate about water. Mm. He created that brand because he saw this is a market that's so freaking boring. Everything is the same. Everything is pure and it's clear and it's a plastic bottle and it has a name like Rainbow Springs.
Mm-hmm. And they're all springs, mountain springs,
shake it up.
Yeah.
Let's
bring in the skulls.
I mean, first of all, I mean, I don't remember much from my very first marketing class, but I do remember this. Do not associate your brand with death. So
it's rule number one. I
mean, he just started with everything that was wrong and mm-hmm. the fastest growing beverage brand in America. Now think about any market. Think about automotive. I mean, who's doing anything interesting that's shaking it up in their marketing? I don't know what a Hemi engine is. I don't care. Think about you know, spirits and liquor and wine. It's all the same, you know.
Yeah.
It's dew drops on the vine. You know, one of my big frustrations is pizza. Pizza should be so happy and joyful and crazy. And the most creative thing we have, I know you've got a lot of listeners maybe in other countries, but at least here in America, no one out pizzas the hut. What does that even mean? For pizza? So, I mean, the world is ripe for disruption, for that human craziness. Yes, the bots are so good, but we still own crazy. We have to do it. Now, there might
be- We own crazy is pretty crazy. Interesting.
Yeah. There might be a reason, like maybe there's a law in pharma or wealth management that says you can't be crazy.
Yeah.
But most of the reason we are so boring is because of fear. We're worried about our job. We're worried about our customer. We're worried about pissing off the legal department. We're worried about pissing off a customer. It's fear. And if fear is the reason that you are only competent, you have got to rethink your career because you are vulnerable.
So funny, because I was just going to ask a fear-based question. But like, I totally hear you. Get crazy, do wild things, go against the grain. But do you feel like there's a risk of like doing that so much that you become gimmicky or stunty and it loses that authentic, it loses like the very thing that you're trying to preserve?
Well, I think, so that's a great question. And it's a question I think It's too soon to answer, really, to be fair. But we can see some certain examples of brands that have just taken on this sort of magical quality. And we'll use Liquid Death as one. I mean, they're not a startup, I wouldn't say anymore. They're like 5-6 years old. They're growing. I think another one that is very interesting in this way is Yeti. Yeti is a freaking ice cooler, right? And they've created, I mean, they didn't spend one single dime on advertising until year five of their company. And now they're their sensation. Now, here's where it gets interesting. So like a brand that's really, you know, just doing crazy things. Have you seen like the videos that Nutter Butter is putting out? Like the Nutter Butter.
I didn't even know Nutter Butter was still a thing.
That's right. And that's why it's the perfect brand to do something crazy, because they don't mean anything. So
low stakes.
So
they don't mean a thing, Nutter Butter.
They're putting up these videos on TikTok, and literally it is like an LSD fever dream. Now, I'm not speaking from experience here. I'm speaking from hearsay. But so these videos, they are literally, they're almost like a horror movie in a way. It's just these fast-paced images of black cats and strange images and strange names and weird words and then like, you know, every week they're putting these things out. Now, Nutter Butter has tripled their sales. But here's the question I have. We're seeing this sort of style pop up more and more often. But here's where I think it's got to go. Somehow in this fever dream, there has to be a narrative. So like there's a new community on Reddit that's trying to decode the Nutter Butter cookies. That's great. It's creating conversations. But if there is no code, if there is no narrative,
it's just chaos,
then it's a stunt.
Yeah, that's interesting.
All right. Now, you've got to have it. There's got to be a story. And there's got to be. So what I want to see, Nutter Butter cookies, when you go into a store, still looks the same. Where's the insanity? At least put an Easter egg in your packaging.
Yeah.
Put an Easter egg in, you know, in the cookies themselves. You know, how hard would it be to emboss, you know, one of the things that keeps showing up in the Nutter Butter, you know, insanity is shrimp. Shrimp and black cats. So why not emboss a shrimp on the cookies? Mom and dad won't care. Mom and dad won't even notice it when they pack your lunch for school. But I mean, that's gonna create a laugh from, you know, the kids that are watching these videos. So there's got to be a narrative. It has to be sustainable. It has to be integrated into the entire brand at some point.
I was kind of thinking, connecting what you're just saying with talking about the people in the role before who are doing like the safe thing. So your safe thing, boarding industry, you shouldn't expect it to get a remarkable result. Maybe that was okay for a long time, like you're just chugging along, but AI is making that not okay. Because like all the safe things is the things that are very easy to teach the AI. So like the disruption is going to occur where people are doing the safe thing every day. So you have to take risks. You have to do things that are uniquely human and different. And like in this case, you're also giving an example of like, okay, Nutter Butter is doing something that's wild and crazy and chaotic, but a human being needs a narrative.
Yes.
So we're always searching for the narrative in our world at any given moment. It could be like COVID happens and, all work will always be remote. Okay, that's not actually what's going to be the case. That's like the extreme version of this. Mm. And then here, it's like bring the connection back in so that the humans can figure out why the shrimp thing is happening, why the black cats are happening. And actually a hole in the narrative is the fact that like the packaging hasn't changed. And so for those people searching, which is actually very fun to search for a narrative. Like I think about, I don't know if you ever watched Westworld.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Like Westworld was like, what? A lot of that show was like, what's going on? And then episodes would finish. And then I would, the first thing I would do is go talk to my two friends I watched with it. Yeah. And then I would go onto Reddit and we would look
That's amazing.
Like, you know, then we'd go look.
Severance is the same way.
Yeah, exactly. And so you just go and Severance exactly. And then like, we're finding this thing out together. We're like a part of it.
Yeah, but isn't that, aren't those interesting examples where why can't you have that narrative for a brand? You know, if you can have it for a TV show mm-hmm. and, you know, brands are creating serial content now, right? Serial video content. L'Oreal is doing it.
Yeah.
H&M is doing it. BMW is doing it. All, you know, serial video content that's very creative, that's has big stars even in some of these shows. And you don't need a big budget to do that. You just have to be freaking interesting. I mean, why couldn't you create something where even, you know, if you've got, you know, even a local business and you're creating videos for YouTube or for, you know, Instagram or TikTok or whatever, why can't you create videos that make people say, what was that? Wow. Let me show it to my family. See what they think. I wonder what they're going to do next.
Yes. And I think like the really solid kind of personal brand approach is often doing that. You know, it's funny, at Wistia, we kind of accidentally did this in the early days because we would make videos, we'd post to our blog.
Yeah.
And it would be like, it started with like product features, and then it was like, how do you light stuff? And then it was like, how do you use a microphone? But we didn't understand, because we're putting ourselves in, is that we actually had a cast of characters.
Yeah.
And you were following along with the journey of Wistia.
Yeah.
By going to the blog. And I think this happens on like my personal channels on LinkedIn as an example of like, hey, I'm sharing all this stuff. I'm at this event. I'm trying this thing. We launched this new thing. You're like seeing the world through my eyes. But you know what it made me think of is there's a coffee shop that's close to me. It's called Brown Bee. And they make really great croissants. Okay. Fantastic croissants. Really like artful croissants. And I stumbled across their Instagram. And I didn't realize that they had been sharing the journey of starting this business before it even launched. Like they bought the building, they did a big build out. It's a beautiful like interior. Then they're talking about like finding the recipes for the croissants and the coffee, or whatever. The guy is like obsessed with cars. He has like cars and coffee meetup every weekend. He's showing the videos of all these people coming. Then they launched a clothing line. This is a local business in Providence, Rhode Island. This is a tiny one store operation. And I'm watching these videos. I'm like, I feel like I'm on the journey with him. Mm-hmm. And it's like really fun to engage. And then in my mind, the narrative is there. And I'm like, well, it's Saturday morning.
It's like, everything. It's everything. It's personal brand because just a quick little thing. I mean, I don't really sell my business on Instagram. My Instagram is basically like hiking. It's like trees and flowers and things I'm interested in, right? And I'll get 5 likes from my friends just who they just want to encourage me. But if I have a picture or a video that's like me and my wife on a hike,
yeah,
then you get 200 likes.
Yeah.
Because you've got to have that human element. The human element just changes everything. And when you're in the middle of the journey and you're being vulnerable and sharing your story, that begins the trust. That begins the narrative. That is something that AI can never touch because there's only one you. There's only one person with your ideas and your perspective and your heritage. And that trust then that starts to build. That's the centerpiece for community.
We had a Bring Your Kids to Work Day event recently.
It was so good.
And Wistia is remote, but you know, there's like 30% of people who could come into the office. And it was like an in-person thing and it was a remote thing. And it was so fun. And you know, seeing everyone's kids come and like they're mini-me's, right? Because like we don't see their kids that much anymore. They're like, oh my gosh, this is Dan's children. And you know, it's like, it's so funny to see that. And we made a little video of the kids answering basic questions like, what does my parent do at work?
Yeah.
And they're like, they type. You're like, what are you going to be when you grow up? Like, I'm going to be a typer. Yeah. Or like, I take calls. Or my daddy talks, like, sells people too much at home or whatever.
What does your dad do for work?
He builds stuff on his computer. He makes software. I don't know.
Do you know what his job is called?
No.
He's a musician.
He makes videos.
Nothing to do with our product. Like, this is like a purely cultural thing. And yet, this video, when we shared it, did incredibly well.
Oh, sure. And
I don't think an AI would ever be like, go make a video of bring your kids to work and have the kids. It could never, ever, ever happen.
Right.
And so there's all these implicit messages that are really easy to forget are happening, right? Yeah. Like,
That video is never going to happen on runway.
Exactly. And it's like for the viewer, this company cares about bringing people together. They value their kids. They're making fun of themselves. But also it's incredibly relatable to anyone who works in tech where their kids have no idea what they do. And so it actually is a broader message. And I don't know, it's just kind of interesting as we're talking to think about that kind of thing, because that's not the type of thing that we often think to make, you know? Yeah. It's like, but it is an incredibly human story. It is, if you ran into someone on the street and said, what happened to work last week? It might be the first thing that you said, but it wouldn't be the first thing you'd think to put on social media.
And again, the thing I love about that is just really, it brings everything together and it shows you don't need a big agency. You don't need a big budget to do these things. You need to make a difference. And that's one of the things I was so careful to emphasize in this new book is that, look, there are some bombastic examples. There's an example of, Giant Spoon got the contract for the second season of Stranger Things, and they posted it. They had these images come to life on the Empire State Building. Okay, well, that's cool, but not many people can do that. But, you know, for every bombastic story, there are three stories in the book about just, it's, you know, sometimes money inhibits creativity. It's just about being real and keeping humans in the middle of it and just zigging when your competitors are zagging. And it really gets back to this idea of putting of operating in a way that's fearless. Most industries are country clubs. They just keep doing the same thing because they don't want to rock the competition. Everybody's just kind of safe. Everybody's just kind of happy, and AI will eat that alive.
Do you think that we're going to see like more education around nurturing creativity? Because like the assumption here is that we're all unique. We all have our own individual POV.
Yeah.
And we have the potential to create. But I don't know that we're like in a society that's like, be creative, like foster that.
I think it's going to happen in two ways. We have young people today who are growing up with AI and they have no fear. And and they are going to be creatively explosive in amazing and breathtaking ways. Then you've got, people who we're in, like you and me, we're in creative jobs. We work for creative companies. And we sort of have our way. And I think we have a little bit of fear that, oh my gosh, AI can do some of the things that we do. Is AI going to override our skills? Is it going to nip at the heels of our skill sets and even our careers? And I think we have to go through a certain amount of grieving that AI is going to do some of the things that we've enjoyed doing. But it's also an opportunity to reimagine how much bigger and bolder you can be. It's a chance to reimagine the new you, that you can be a bolder and more creative and have a bigger impact. An example for me is I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher. At this point in my life, I want to mentor people. I've created a MarkBot, and people can talk to this MarkBot. It's trained on me. It's trained on my books. It's trained on my blog posts. I'm using AI to scale mentoring, to scale teaching. It's reimagining me in a bigger, bolder, global way. I've always thought about, I wish I could mentor more people. It's so time consuming. It's so hard. but this is a way I can use AI to be a bigger me. And that's the opportunity once you get past the fear.
That's very interesting, as you're basically saying, like, all right, let's find the things this is good at now that I don't have enough time to do. That, you know, I imagine the bot is probably not as good as talking to you directly, but like
for a lot of people, better.
but even if it isn't as good, it might be much better than not having it, right? I don't know why I always do this, but I always think about like, what's the thing that happened in the past is going to help us figure out what's going to happen here? And
that's a good question.
And one of the things I've thought about a lot with like at least AI and video, because I think the AI generative video is getting so good that you can't really tell what's real or not. And it, even if it's on the border, in just a few years, you won't be able to tell. So what happens? And I think the answer we kind of have a little bit, which is like, we look at like blockbuster movies the last 20 years. We went from having CGI that was obvious to CGI that isn't obvious. And what, like, do we care if there's CGI in a movie anymore? No. We care, is the story really good?
Right.
Is it actually entertaining and engaging?
Yeah.
And if you're going to see an action movie or you're going to see a sci-fi movie and there's a bunch of CGI, we've all seen the things that have like very impressive looking CGI and their movies are boring and terrible. Like that happens all the time. So it is much more about like human taste, quality of the story, and the creative approach. Like if something's really creative and really interesting, I do think that that is valued more. And then there's also like, you have the, the action movies with Tom Cruise where, you know, he actually did the thing.
Yeah.
And so the stakes in the movie are higher because you know the person did it for real.
Yeah, I love that example.
I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be like, by default, you assume it's all CGI. So you're going to value it based on like how creative it is, how interesting it is, how timely it is, what it makes you think. Really, fundamentally, are you entertained? And then if you can show people that real humans are involved, the stakes are going to go up a lot and you're going to value it more.
Yeah, I love that example because it's part of my mantra these days is when CGI or AI creates content that's indistinguishable from what a human can create, our customers won't care. They won't care. And our mission is to make them care.
Yes.
Tom Cruise example is brilliant. Because he inserts himself in the story in this crazy, bold way, unique way that, yes, we care because that is different. And in a weird way, it's the same. It's similar to the coffee shop story.
Yeah.
Because if he just told a story about coffee or he had AI generated videos of coffee, who cares? But he has inserted himself into the narrative and like grab people by the shirt and say, I demand that you care because this is me and my story.
I want to jump into kind of the newest book, the one that just came out more, and talk about how AI is changing our customers. Like, how is it changing expectations? What did you find in your research here?
So I want to be clear that, this wasn't, I was part of the research, but the research was actually sponsored by an institute for the future at Elon University. And these were researchers that were ex-Pew executives that sponsored this research. They brought 300 futurists together. I think they had 299. And they said, we need 300. What about Schaefer? Okay, bring him in. But I got in.
Congratulations.
And the mission was, how will AI change humanity by 2035? Now, it seems like an impossible question, but this research was profound. It was profound. And look, even the Silicon Valley insiders, they don't know what the future of AI is. They don't know what's next. They really... It's evolving.
Yeah.
But when you get 300 experts together and they reach consensus on a few things, we should pay attention to that. because that will help us navigate of what's probable. So they identified 12 different aspects of humanity that could be impacted, but they really had consensus around six. And then what I did is I explored this through the filter of sales and marketing. If humanity is being rewired, our customers are being rewired. We've got to know that. We have to be on top of that. And we have to think about that. And it's happening now. I mean, it's in the headlines. So one of the things is cognitive offloading. And an easy way to think about this is I used to do my taxes. Once I got married, my wife likes to do the taxes. So she does the taxes. She does it every year. As long as my wife is around, I'm fine. But if I had to do my own taxes, I'd be lost. I've had cognitive offloading to my wife. Mm-hmm. That's very common in a relationship. Mm-hmm. What's happening is we are offloading more and more of our cognitive processes to AI.
Isn't that terrifying, though?
It can be. It can be because, well, how that is rewiring our customers is so when I could have AI write a book, okay? I wrote this book, called Audacious, How Humans Win in an AI Marketing World. I could put a prompt into ChatGPT, could write the whole thing. But when I write a book, it takes 2 years of research and writing. It's like getting a master's degree every time I write a book. And something happens called phoresis. Phoresis is when you do the work to obtain the knowledge, it becomes integrated into your soul. You have a new capacity. You have a new competency. When I wrote the book on brand community, belonging to the brand, was I an expert in brand community at the beginning? No, I was at the end. I can consult about it. I can write about it. I can give speeches about it. I'm giving a workshop to Procter & Gamble next month on brand community. That could have never happened unless I wrote the book and went through that learning process. Here's the problem. Most people just want the answer. And that's the crisis happening in the educational system today. The kids don't want to learn. They don't have to learn. They can turn to AI to get the answer. And they're coming out of even college with not a lot of competency. Another thing that's explored in this research that I explore in my book is empathy. So, I mean, one of my mantras is the most human company wins, right? That was the subtitle of Marketing Rebellion that featured Chris and Wistia. The most human company wins. You got to rethink that a little bit when people trust the empathy coming from bots. And I think in the future, the most human company will be a blend. People will use humans, when they need to use humans, when they should use humans. How do we know where to draw the line? How do we know where we put a wall and say, nope, we will never go there? I mean, this is what's going to happen because this is what always happens. Companies are going to go too far. They're going to go overboard. They're going to invest too much in AI. They're going to use AI too much in customer service, and it's going to blow up. We've already seen some examples of that.
Yeah.
Then it'll come back and they'll say, yeah, we got to hire those people back, right? So the being most human company, it's going to be a blend. I think another important aspect is that people are relying on AI for their decision-making. I recently went to France. I went to Paris. And I went to ChatGPT and I said, I like history, I like nature, I like art. Plan a schedule for me over the next 5 days. Tell me where to go. Tell me where to eat. Tell me where to stop. Give me the metro line on how to get there. I followed the schedule. There was no brand content. There were no brand videos. There was no advertising. I literally just followed the decisions ChatGPT made. So in the book, I explore these ideas. What is the strategy? We are, the customer is the bot. It's like selling diapers. We're not selling to the end user.
Yeah.
We're selling to the decision maker. The decision maker is the freaking bot.
Yeah.
And so it's a new day. It's a new strategy.
Yeah. I think it's super interesting because there's some counterintuitive stuff in there.
Yes, there is.
And I think there's stuff that people are not paying enough attention to already. Like when you're talking about the AI being the decision maker and making the content for the AI, like look at Sylvie's like eyes are like, oh yeah, my God.
I was like, the content, what did you say? The customer is the bot. I was like, yes. The limit does not exist.
But it's true. But it actually is already this, right? Like people go, because once you start asking these more nuanced questions to an AI and you get a really nuanced answer, like it's kind of addicting because it's like talking to a person. And so, but that LLM has to have the information from somewhere. And so if it can't see it, can't factor it in. So it has to see it. So then you have to publish it and you have to do it in such a way that it's going to find it. It's going to see it. It's going to understand it. One of the things I think is very interesting in this world is like you have the inherent knowledge inside the LLM search based on when it was trained. And then you have the additional version where it's doing the broader search, the deeper research. And I think in that broader, deeper research thing, it actually is going to be a lot harder to game over time in a way where like SEO, you could have a big SEO play and get tons of traffic that's not that related. You get a small percentage of the traffic to become your customer, know your brand. That's going to be much harder. But conversely, if you actually have an incredible product or an incredible experience and a great brand and people actually talk about it, they actually like it, they review it positively, I think you're going to do better because the LLM is going to look across all those signals to give you like an answer in a way that SEO did not. I've gotten to a similar place as you, which is like brand is going to matter more. 100%. Quality of the product and service is going to matter more. And then you have to make your data really accessible and work hard to make it available because it's in a lot of cases, it's like someone wants to show up on the itinerary.
Yes.
Or when someone's doing, effectively everyone has a travel agent now.
Yeah.
That they didn't before. And so all this AI travel agent, which is just ChatGPT, Perplexity, whatever you're using, is going to be sourcing that data. You want to be recommended. You want to be in the list. And to do that is a different thing.
Well, and this is where it gets emotional because, you know, a few weeks ago, Cloudflare, which protects millions of websites, came out with this announcement that said, we're going to protect your websites from AI.
Yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
And AI is not going to crawl your websites because it's emotional because it's like, look, AI didn't ask me. And I did all this work and I don't get any attribution. I don't get any credit. I don't get any money. Well, you know, screw you. The day they made that announcement, I called my web guy and said, toggle it off.
Yeah.
Let them in.
You got it.
Because I want AI to, I want to be present. I'm getting business from AI. AI is recommending me. And I got a new customer. And I said, you know, how'd you find me? And she said, well, I went to ChatGPT. And I said, who are the top 10 digital marketing consultants in the world? And I was on the list. And so I played around with it. And I kind of consistently was coming up on the list. And I asked my friends in Europe to do it. And the same thing, I was coming up on the list. Now, let's be honest. Am I one of the top 10 digital marketing gurus in the world? No. I can name 10 of my friends who are smarter than me, but I show up. I've been blogging every single week since 2009. I've had a podcast for 13 years. I've written 12 books and they're all in AI somewhere. So I might not be the smartest, but I show up and my content is there. And so we've got to put the emotions aside and teach AI that it's okay to stick me in there. I'm part of the glue, I'm part of the data that AI is chewing up and spitting back out to make the glue that holds it together. And I'd rather be in than be out.
Yeah, and I think that's a weird thing. I mean, it's similar to the trade that we made, which was like letting Google crawl our websites,
right?
Because like Google crawled our websites for years, and in return we got traffic. Then they started doing instant answers, where they took the answer from your website and didn't give you the traffic and showed it on that page. Yeah. And people were like uncomfortable with that. And I think the interesting thing is like the fact that it is a chat interface kind of changes it again, because you're asking more nuanced things and you can go back and forth and ask more questions. So we kind of know you are present versus like where the instant answer stopped people from going to your website. I don't know. It's kind of the same trend that we've had forever of like, basically people do more research before they talk to you. Like that's what's been happening the last 20 years. And it's like, guess what? They do a lot more research before they talk to you. But once they're there,
yeah,
they're probably much more qualified. And by the way, we basically introduced last summer, I think it was, we introduced a field when you sign up with Wistia that just says, where'd you hear about us? It's like the most old school thing you can possibly do. You know, we have all this perfect data, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, we need this simple thing. Where'd you hear about us?
Yeah.
And we started to see in the other category, people adding ChatGPT and AI search. And then we made it its own category. And now we get more people coming from that than we get from search engines.
Wow. Mine's not that. I mean, the traffic to my website from ChatGPT has quadrupled in 2025.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, coming mostly from other types of search. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because
that's wonderful.
Well, it shows up differently. If you look at Google Analytics, it's not as high because there's a lot of direct. Yes. It's when people tell us where they heard about us that it gets to this level that it's higher.
Well, good for you. You're doing some good things then.
We're doing what we can. Yeah. Mark, this has been a delight. I feel like we could just keep going for a really long, really long time. But we're not going to, because I think people should read the books. Is there anything in these topics that we've been touching around that you're like, oh, I hope we get into this other topic, but we didn't get into it, or unconventional take you want to make sure we get in here before we wrap?
Well, no, I mean, this has been a wonderful conversation. And so thanks so much for connecting with me again and renewing the conversation. You know, I think the overall thing for me is, I guess, number one is renewing your optimism around AI and what you can become. And the other thing is to start to really get on top of how our customers are changing, how their decision making is changing, because this is going to change industry forever. It's not going to go back. And you know, we talked about empathy, we talked about trust, but it even goes beyond that, where we see 8% of Gen Z has like a social relationship with a character AI bot. You know, there's real friendships. There's real meaningful relationships. So trust is being transferred in some ways from human beings because it's effortless, right? I mean, you don't have to, you don't have to compromise. You don't have to work on the relationship. So a brand is trust. You and I talked about that. That usually starts with a human being. Certainly was the case for you. Certainly was the case for me. What happens when your most trusted relationship in the world is with a non-human entity who's going to be advising you on your life and your purchases? So, you know, we got to get on top of this. We got to start. I know it sounds bizarre, but it really is happening now. And so we need to understand that and start processing it.
Incredible food for thought to end on. So
my teeth are chattering.
Yes. Sylvie is going to go take a nap after this.
I'm going to go call therapist.
Yes.
No, just use
a human.
Yeah.
Just use a human.
The bots are cheaper.
Yeah. I agree. Just use a bot. But Mark, thank you so much for being here. This is a true delight. Where can people connect with you to follow along and learn more?
Sure. It's very easy. You don't even have to remember my name. If you can remember Businesses Grow, that's my website, Businesses Grow. You can find the books that we talked about today, my blog, my podcast, and all my social connections.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It was great to see you.
Thank you.
You know, I love episodes like that. Both heady and actionable.
Slightly terrifying.
The kids have, 8% of them have strong friendships with AI.
It's a lot to take in. I'm absorbing it. I like the idea that human creativity is still the differentiator. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I'm like, well, what if AI learns human creativity? Then what?
Well, it's just basically the state. It's like stakes, right? It's like if it's there are certain things, yes, that AI will do a better job at coming up with, but I still think that there's like randomness and authenticity, and I think when there's like really big decisions, there you're going to want humans involved. So it's really just like who can tell the best story.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like I feel like this the thing I'm hungry for is like more storytelling curriculum, like more put that in grade school, put that in junior high, put that in high school, put that throughout college. Get better at story.
Yeah, and what people want to connect to. Like it's almost like get better at story than the level above, like emotionally, what are we looking for and how do we want to spend our time? So it is super interesting. And I mean, I do think that his point at the end of like, hey, we should be optimistic that there's a lot of opportunity, but like we have to be fearless.
Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of, yes, there's a lot of tension and sort of contradiction within this topic, which never really lands well for me. But I think optimists have an appetite to like really make some big changes and some good changes like you.
Yes. That's right. Thank you so much. But I do think the fearless part is the part that I would point to, which is like, I do think it's true that in a lot of industries, you've been able to just like do the best practice mm-hmm. and it works. Mm-hmm. And you don't get a ridiculous result, but you get a good enough result. I do think his point is like that's going away and people have to figure out how to be more fearless. And a lot of the times, the reason why I'm an optimist when it comes to this is like I actually often hear bold ideas from people and then they just talk themselves out of it.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
me.
Yeah, I wasn't specifically referencing you, but I think it's like this, my takeaway would be give yourself more permission to go after the bold ideas.
Be audacious.
Yeah,
be audacious.
Read Mark's book.
Listen to our show.
Listen to the show. That's it for this episode. Please like, review, subscribe, wherever you do all those things. And don't forget, you can always email us at ttlpod@wisa.com. Connect with us directly on LinkedIn. That is where we are most active. And until next time, stay cool.